Hi, everyone. Welcome to the live FS webinar, Best Practices for Cultivating Major Donors, sponsored by Talisma Fundraising. I'm Margaret Battistelli, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success and the host of today's event. And I have to say, this must be a very important topic because we have over 1,100 registered attendees today, and that is definitely a record for us. So obviously, you know that the gifts of all sizes are important to your mission, but major gifts can be transformational. How do you cultivate these relationships with major gift donors? Basically, how do you get them? And what are the strategic moves involved in the most successful solicitations? Today, we have three fundraising pros on hand to talk about these issues and others. Joining us today are Jeff Jowdy, President of Lighthouse Council, Leanne Crow, Development Officer, Major Gifts for Jacksonville State University Foundation, and Frankie M. Piccarilli, Major Gift Officer for the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. But before we jump in, there are a few technology pointers I should go over to help you make the most of today's live event. First off, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by checking on the help button at the bottom of the console, or let us know via the Ask a Question box. Second, make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in any interactive portions of today's presentation. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you're enjoying this webinar and would like to spread the word to your peers, and we hope you do, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the Survey button. This survey will also be distributed at the end of today's webinar. As you know, today's speakers will be answering select questions live at the end of the presentation. Use the Ask a Question feature on the console to submit your questions for consideration at any time. You don't have to wait until the end. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same audience link you used to watch the presentation today. After that, the webinar can be viewed from the FS website at fundraisingsuccessmag.com. And finally, we encourage you to tweet about this webinar today. Please use hashtag #FSWebinar. And now, with all that out of the way, I will turn things over to Jeff.
Great. Thank you, Margaret. Good afternoon. Thank you all for joining us. Major Gifts is certainly a topic, as Margaret mentioned, near and dear to all of our hearts, and certainly for two reasons. One, Margaret mentioned, and we all know that our organizations depend on these, but also for as professionals in terms of the deep relationships that we enjoy with major donors are certainly profound and ones that are lasting for ourselves. While we often focus on with major donors, we think in terms of individuals, encouragement that with foundation giving and corporate giving, that there's still individuals that we're interacting with and they're reading our proposals, and so many of these principles also hold true for many in the foundation and corporate world. And of course, the caveat that we're sharing some broad experiences, but that of course every donor is different, every circumstance is different, and of course with what is a major gift is going to depend, vary for individuals throughout their lifestyle, and also for organizations. And for organizations, the major gift threshold typically grows as the organization grows and its development function becomes more sophisticated and its pool of donors grow. For individuals, that threshold can actually, it typically rises, but it also can vary and go down as through a life cycle and circumstances. And donors often have circumstances that we're not aware of, whether it be the health situations or family situations. So certainly a lot of interesting dynamics, and that's what the art and science of fundraising makes it interesting and exciting. So how do you identify prospective major donors? Obviously, in by and large, in most cases, it's those who have been involved, who have deep relationships, and are the best prospects. Having said that, you know, we've seen many, many times over and repeatedly where a donor is introduced to an organization, they embrace the cause, and make a significant major gift in a first-time capacity. That's the exception, not the rule, and that's often based on relationships with volunteers or other donors, but certainly does happen. But typically, you're looking at long-time friends, and of course, the opportunity is and the challenge not only to retain the donors, but to retain involvement. You're looking at board members, former board members, alumni, former staff, former parents? How do you keep all these great friends involved after they may perceive their time and commitment to your organization waning? So it certainly is always an opportunity there as well. When we look at the kind of the continuum of major gifts, obviously from smaller gifts to major gifts, that we're talking about more relationship-based, we're doing more listening than asking, we're talking more about shared values than money. Again, in most cases, a long-term involvement. And in most cases, although changing to a degree now, we'll share in a minute, that typically a lot of times major gifts, people are more in a distribution mode than in building their wealth and survival, and also changing older and younger. Certainly there are exceptions. And then we have ongoing, in terms of cultivation, ongoing relationship cycle that initially the identification, hopefully in most organizations, only happens once and we don't lose that donor. But it is an ongoing relationship and a cycle as you deepen that relationship. It's not a static relationship, it's dynamic. Each step building on the next, including throughout a life cycle, many, many opportunities, hopefully, for major gifts and for, as Margaret mentioned, making a transformational difference in the organization. And then how do we cultivate major donors? We've all heard about MOOS management, donor relationship management, so we know that shepherding multiple relationships in an organization or within individual staff members, the development or advancement team, it requires a system. It becomes complicated and can't be happenstance. So it's important that we advance multiple relationships for our staff, for our volunteers, as well as the organization as a whole. So we'll want goals for each relationship. What is the end goal in terms of the next gift or advancing a relationship? A plan. The plan's important to outline the engagement, who, what, when, where, how, why, how, a plan that's regular and appropriate. And then that plan would include relationships with staff and volunteers. And then when you've established that plan and you move ahead with that, then how do you benchmark? How do you continually evaluate? And then what systems are in place to record what happens and document and be sure that you're on track? And again, the one of the best cultivation experiences, of course, is a good giving experience that's appropriate for the organization, for that individual, and again, personal relationships.
Jeff, I'm sorry, it's Margaret. Can I just interrupt for a second?
Sure.
Could you speak up just a little bit?
We've
had a couple of people send in that they couldn't hear you. Thank you.
Absolutely. And then part of the major donor relationship and dynamics would be to know your donor, and knowing that every donor is different, and understanding why donors give. And there are several great resources that many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with in terms of profiles of donors. Thomas Stanley has done research for over 20 years on wealthy individuals and why they and why they give. The Millionaire Next Door and companion books, the Seven Faces of Philanthropy, which notes the seven characteristics that mobilize philanthropy among high net worth individuals, and then some new work by Paul Shervish of Boston College, and got a great chapter in the companion to nonprofit marketing, New Physics to Philanthropy, that talks about this new generation of philanthropists who are giving, realizing significant wealth at a younger age and willing to give more during their lifetime versus bequest and planned gifts. And again, the major piece is that knowing that individual, and everybody's different, and individuals, donors are different through their lifetime. So is it when it comes time to make that invitation to give, the best outcome is that if cultivated properly, many major donors will self-solicit. When a donor asks, what can I do to help, how can I be a part, that's exciting. But typically you'll have many opportunities, and we have that relationship continuum in the cycle, you'll want to offer periodic opportunities for a donor to invest and hopefully invest in a major way. If the donor's at the point where he or she asks, how can I be of help? This is something that's exciting. Then the reality is what you share to make a gift invitation is not that terribly important. But there are some best practices and some good insight and feedback in terms of what we should do and how we should present opportunities. The most important would be overall to ask, to be respectful and to listen, and to respond to the donor and understand where he or she is at that point in time. Now, if the yes or no is not the end of the relationship, it's just the next step. So whether it's a yes and you celebrate the opportunity and you learn more about what motivated the donor to say yes, at the same time, if it's a no, with both cases, we want to probe and find out what was behind that decision-making and how can we help the donor fulfill their vision and meet their needs better. So, of course, if there was a negative, we want to find out, was it the project, was it the timing, was it the amount, was it the people who shared the opportunity, and we want to move ahead and advance the relationship, whether it's a yes or a no, because it's ongoing relationships and dialogue in major gifts. And then some good advice, of course, and again, we talked about the exceptions to the rule, but great advice from the legendary Cy Seymour, the pioneers in fundraising, that reminds us that with major gifts, it's going to take a little bit longer. If you want to raise alfalfa, you can get several crops a year. If you want to raise oaks, it will take a little bit longer. So again, every situation is different. Every donor is different. Great excitement and reward in the art and science of fundraising and major gifts is certainly one of the most beneficial, of course, to our organizations and also the most rewarding that we as professionals get to engage with some really inspiring volunteers and philanthropists to make a difference. So now I'd like to pass along to Leanne.
Thank you, Jeff. My name is Leanne Crow. I am with Jacksonville State University, and we are in Alabama. We are a regional university of approximately 10,000 students. We have about 52,000 alumni, and demographically we sit between Birmingham, Alabama, and Atlanta, Georgia. So that gives you just a little idea about, we speak a lot in the same context, but it definitely depends on your institution or what organization you're with. But basically, cultivating donors is something that, is the same. One easy way that I have of, we can talk about cultivation cycles. Some people call it moves management. But one easy way to remember it is by calling it the five I's. And this is something that I want to talk to today, having slides on each one of these and just also giving you examples of each of these concepts. Identification. I put some ideas down here. There are all kinds of donor and mining, capabilities out there today. A lot of ways you can find your donors and your prospects. This just happens to be something that works for me. So I put it here because if you find someone that's already been giving to your annual fund, then, they've been given unsolicited gifts. And so they already have an affinity for your institution. This is just a great way to take them to the next move or the next level up and get them, more involved and take them up to that major gift level. The next I is information. Use this to your advantage when you're going out and meeting with people. You not only your main objective is to find out more about them, but you want to let them know about your institution and what's going on. It may be that they might not have been back to your institution in a while, and you want to let them know what you're doing, certain programs that you feel like you're doing well, and hopefully all this will lead to finding out what their specific interests are, which leads us to the next I, which is interest. Trying to find out what someone's interest is, it may take several visits to find this out. You can ask strategic questions to try to find out what their interests are. I would warn against trying to go in and have a preconceived notion of what you think their interest is. For example, let's say they have been an annual giver to your institution and they've been given to one program. You can't automatically think that that is something that they would have an affinity for. You would be amazed if you go in and you know, actually start talking to these prospects. You'll find out a lot of information about what they really care about and what their interests are. You know, ways to do this is by asking strategic questions when you're there on your visit. You know, look around the office. See what things seem to be important to them. You know, their family, children, what's their favorite memory of being at your institution. This happens to be one that works very well for me. It seems to open up conversations, and I've really rarely found anyone, you know, that said, oh, we had a bad experience when we were, you know, at the university. It's typically the other way, and people like sharing their experiences with you when they were, you know, at your university. Strategic questions. You know, ask them about other philanthropy and their giving priorities. Talk about, you know, how it makes them feel when they give to that. Do they feel like they're making a difference? And as you're visiting with these prospects, I tried to listen 80% of the time. I think we've all heard that rule. But also make mental notes so that after you've had your visit, you can go out to your car or go back to your office and jot down things about that person, just so that the next time you run into them or you meet them, you know, it's always nice to follow up and say, how was your vacation that we talked about? Or, you know, how is your child? I know you're expecting a good grandchild, that kind of thing. And then hopefully by finding out their interest and asking questions, you can get them involved. And involvement is very, very important. Involvement leads to commitment, and we all know that that leads to investment. Involvement, there's a number of ways you can do this. A lot of them may seem repetitive, but each of those are important. You know, once they're involved and they come back, they can see firsthand the programs you're doing, the differences you're making with students, and some of the ideas for that is, you would think it would be simple, but to invite them back to campus. One thing I've done that was kind of different was I offered to schedule a tour for a couple's grandchildren that they had that were college age, and they were so appreciative of doing that that later on I did get a five-figure gift from that couple. So, you know, whenever you go out of your way to get them back involved, it certainly can pay off in a major gift way. Other involvement ideas are, you know, ask them to come back and speak to a class that maybe they feel like they've had real world experience in. One thing that's been very successful for me in our institution here is to get people to have, you know, gatherings in their community where we can strategically look at our prospect list and invite people back. And this is different than an alumni function. You know, with these type of events, you want to make sure that you have strategically looked at your prospect list and tried to invite people that would, you know, someone you want to get to know on a more intimate level. Investment. This is what we all work toward. This is what we all, you know, this should all be our end result when working for major gifts. But you never want to rush an ask or a solicitation. You know, on the other hand, you don't want it to drag on forever, but it is something that you want to make sure you have followed all the previous moves because you will be much more successful with your ask when you've made sure you followed the previous cultivation moves. Again, skipping steps will not save you time. It will, you know, more than likely reduce your success. And as I think Jeff mentioned about growing the oak, it does take anywhere from 1 to 2 years to, you know, successfully move someone from being an annual donor, for example, to being a major donor, which at our institution is, you know, anywhere from $25,000 and up. cultivation moves can be a number of things. I think probably the most successful that we would all agree on is if you can have a face-to-face interaction with someone, whether you're at a social event or you actually have a personal visit with them. You know, if you can recognize a person, and let's say they get Alumnus of the Year or you appoint them to a board, that's great, but you also want to make sure that that's relevant and it's, you know, relevant for that person because everyone's different. Volunteer engagement is probably the least effective. This would be, I know during a capital campaign, we've had community leaders come together and help us screen prospects so that we would know, you know, more about people in their area. And this does help, but again, it's not as effective as meeting somebody one-on-one. Your cultivation, you should always have a plan. I'm sure if you come from larger institutions, almost everyone probably has a board of visitor or an advisory board. People call them different things for either your college or specific departments if they're large enough. You know, and these, some of these may sound a little corny of events that you could have, but these are things that have worked, you know, that we've had great success actually bringing people back to tailgate with the president before a sporting event. State of the University is where our provost or our president goes out and actually, you know, brings people up to date with what we're doing and what our latest plans are. We've already talked about inviting them back to campus events, but this can be on and off campus, depending on, you know, what areas of the country they live in. Conducting after-hours social events is very effective. I think people are more, you know, apt to be personal with you and open up to you and talk to you more when it's an intimate gathering. I think that works much better. And, of course, we always want to have a stewardship plan. You can never thank someone too much, and, you know, you can never thank someone too much. You thank them, your dean thanks them, the university president thanks them, and this is all on, depending on what level of gift they've given. But we personally send out birthday cards to all our prospect and donors. One great way is to have students call and thank them and let them know how they've personally been affected by their gift. And this works really well when it's a, you know, scholarship situation. And retaining many major donors is, you know, it's very difficult because it is something that you continually have to do. You've had them through the cycle. You've gotten to know this person. They've trusted you. They've given you a gift. And stewarding them is just a better way to get another gift from them. And it lets them know that you truly care and that they really made a difference. And I would like to turn it over now to Frankie Piccarelli with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra.
Hello, everyone. My name is Frankie. I work for the Detroit Symphony Orchestra in the Major Gifts Department. And today I'm just going to take some of the principles that have been talked about already and discuss with you how we actually put those principles into practice. We have a new program that we're launching very soon, which is very similar to some of the programs around the country at other symphonies, and it's called the Governing Members Program. And this is basically our Major Gifts Program, which would help our donors feel like they're more a part of our institution, that they're not just donors who take advantage of donor benefits, like attending our donor lounge during concerts or intermission or attending pre-concert talks, but also really kind of getting into the depth of, and breadth of who we are and what our mission is and our vision and having full impact to what that is. So this right, our next slide is just going to talk about an overview of what the Governing Members Program is. Basically, it's what we see as a philanthropic society. It's unique and it's hands-on opportunities for leadership. We want people to really feel like stakeholders. The Governing Members are the foundation of the DSO annual fund. That's the way we see it. And as you've heard several times already in this presentation, that major gifts really are transformational. But what does that really mean? If it's transformational, does, yes, of course, it's more funding for your institution, but it's transformational because of the relationship that it built, because people feel connected and want to help. And that's what we're trying to do with our Governing Members program. We want members in this group to feel like they have support and counsel of the DSO Board of Directors. And the way we see this commitment is that it is driven by peer nomination, and it's a 3-year term of participation. And during this period, there will be access to all kinds of things, artists and senior leadership, a variety of custom and experience-based events, exclusive travel opportunities for when our orchestra is traveling to Florida or to Europe, perhaps, invitations to serve on institutional task force and committees, and it's a minimum of $10,000 that must be contributed over a 3-year term for the membership. And building a program like this is really having to look at your own institution, what your mission and vision is, and creating that and creating the guidelines around who you really are as an institution, which is what we feel that we've done. So obviously, like any other program, we have to start with prospecting. So when we're identifying our potential pool, we need to look at our donors, our patrons, our board members. We have volunteer council members. Who are they, and who would fit in, who would feel most benefited by this program? Once we assign and cultivate, we want to invite and engage and be a relationship builder. We want the governing members to really feel like this is something that they enjoy. When they come to a concert, and they also, the benefit of being in the governing members is to attend a pre-concert talk by our guest artists, we want them to feel that they really have contributed to a great organization and that they're getting something out of it. So when we solicit and steward them, we expect it to fully be peer-to-peer by another governing member, which is fully staff-supported by our staff here at the DSO, and that it's a 3-year commitment. And the most important thing is that people are thanked, and then they're thanked, and then they're thanked, and then they're stewarded, and they're thanked. We always cannot put enough emphasis on making people feel like they're appreciative. So when we're trying to discover new prospects, we definitely want to look to our board members, their leadership, their friends, their colleagues, who they think might be interested in our program. We want to reach out to our volunteer council members. They do wonderful musical feasts. We have them several times during the year, and a lot of their attendees don't necessarily subscribe to the DSO or come to several concerts a year, so this is a great way for us to meet new people. We want to look to community leaders and friends, and that's something that you can look to in your own organization. We're always trying to brainstorm about how we reach out to people and tell them our vision and mission. Obviously, we want to look at our patron base, at the concerts, the people who attend the concerts or our community events, or if they're guests of a board member or a major donor already. There can never be enough critical review and analysis of your donor and for us, our subscriber base. We're always having to go back to the table. Oh, John Smith attended 28 concerts last year. We need to call him, send him a card, thank him. How do we get him more involved and appreciated? And obviously, with prospecting, you always want to evaluate and rate and come up with a process that your organization sees fit and that you're comfortable with. So the next slide is just an overview of who we're going to, how we're going to find new prospects. This is what I call intentional cultivation. So everything we do has to have a plan. We want to have blends of communication via email or telephone, whether that be letters in the mail or birthday cards or thank you cards. Everything, every cultivation event has to be donor/patron-centered. So really, what do our donors want to see? What do the patrons want to see out of our events? We want it to be inspiring. We want people to have a good time. We want them to feel like they're connected to the community around them and that they want to come back again, have them excited about it. And obviously, we want every event to be planned and repeated in sequence so people start to feel comfortable with the idea and what goes on during the night. So basically, some ideas for what we have talked about for our cultivation events include pre-concert talks. cocktail receptions, meet and greet with musicians and guest artists, which people always love, especially when we have a great guest artist coming in from out of town, insider briefings, which help to explain how we're doing as an institution. And maybe it's with senior leadership. Maybe it's a breakfast with a board member. And also tours of Orchestra Hall. We have such a gem here in Detroit. And if you do work at a cultural institution, people want to see it. They want to walk through. They want to feel like they've seen all the ins and outs. People love seeing our dressing rooms and our green rooms and our guest artist rooms. It really helps them get that behind-the-scenes important kind of feel. So when we looked at our cultivation events and we really talk about what kind of goals we have with those, always keeping our goals at the forefront of our mind, is that we want to inspire supporters to be closer to, obviously, a gift decision. We want to build relationships and a community within the governing members, which is probably the most important piece. We want people within the governing members to be friends and come back and be friendly at events, and we want them to feel like they really are a driving force behind our annual fund together. We want to move potential supporters closer to the DSO, so how they feel about our institution and how they enjoy our concerts and the events that they attend. We want to increase their involvement and enjoyment of the experience and continue this cultivation program as a stewardship. So when we look at being results-driven, because at the end of the day, we're all trying to achieve annual fund goals, we want to think about every event. How did it help us move towards an ask? How did it increase familiarity and interest? So if you ask these questions before the event happens, you want to make sure that they're an integral part of your event. How does it provide a great experience? Are people having fun? How do you help identify individual interests? What kind of conversations are you having? What kind of other governing members? What conversations are they having with potential members? To help really identify individual gifts, because at the end of the day, a true major gifts program is about relationships and it is about individuals. Honoring past donors at events is probably one of the most important aspects of our cultivation events, really making sure that we are showing our appreciation and making people feel special and that their gifts really do make a difference. We want to communicate our vision and mission all the time. We want everybody in the governing members' body to know who we are, what we do, why we do what we do, and what are our goals. We want to inspire investment. So when looking at planning and management, there is nothing more important than planning and recording and reporting. So we want to be absolutely intentional in everything we do, from invites to briefings to meetings. We want to be cognitive of every prospect's status. So when we're talking about John Smith, we want to know that what his gift was last year, what we're going to be asking him for this year, where we feel he's at the move management process. So you can never be too organized. You need to track and organize all the activities and keep notes of interest. Just like Leanne said, it's so important to jot down little things so that you don't forget perhaps about somebody's grandkids or their children or their aunts. We have a saying around here that we use quite frequently, and we say, know thy donor. So when we're looking at practicing these great principles, we want to make them habits. So why is moves management so important? Why is it really taken the philanthropic community over the edge and brought us all up to a point of professionalism where we really can achieve our goals? And I believe that it helps us to encourage our institution to enhance its donor relationships. It helps to evaluate the major cultivation and the board development. We establish best practices. We had great donor interaction from making a plan and sticking to it. And we ensured continued movement towards our goal. We're keeping the goal of our annual fund at the forefront of our practice. So when we're talking about governing members and helping governing members to recruit other members, we really want everybody to have the DSO mission in mind. And that is so important that everybody knows the things that make us who we are. So artistic excellence, the community-supported orchestra, education and outreach, accessible concerts. We want our governing members to really to be able to speak our language and believe in our principles and practices. So that when we ask them to do peer-to-peer solicitations, it's easy for them to talk about our vision and our leaders and talk about our campaign and have a strategy to make a request and know know our donor benefits and know what these people will, how these people will be appreciated and know the impact of their gift. Because in the end, we're just trying to assure that our annual fund goal can support a sustainable future. And stewardship, again, as Leanne and Jeff had mentioned, is so important. It's endless thoughtful opportunities are out there. And these are just a couple of them that we talk about here in our office. Lunch with DSO leaderships, communication regarding upcoming concerts of interest. It's kind of like that email on a Wednesday morning if you know that one of your major donors likes jazz, and we have a great jazz concert coming up, and it's inviting them to the concert and gifting them with big box seats. It's that kind of thoughtfulness that is really required to help people feel appreciated. Passing along tickets or sending CDs or a download for music. So we want to also keep the members that are already in the governing members program. We want to enhance their membership. So how do we do that? We invite them to special gatherings, ask members to volunteer for planning committees, ask their advice. People want to know that they're helping. Give them personal invites to concerts or specials, and communicate regularly with updates and stats, even if that's just a short email to say, "Dear governing members, thank you so much. I just want to let you know that for this month we are over goal." Very simple. It could be just a couple sentences just to keep your organization at the forefront of their minds. And lastly, this is one of my favorite quotes and why I got into fundraising in the first place, and it's, "Giving away money is not an easy job. Money alone cannot build character or transform evil into good. It cannot restore the influence and the vitality of the home. Neither can it maintain the valleys and plains of peace. Spent alone, it might as well stay in the vaults. It cries for full partnership with leaders of character and goodwill." I wish you all the best luck, and if you have any questions, I am always available by email or phone.
Great. Thank you so much. We did cover a lot of ground, and we actually have quite a few questions. But before we do that, we do have a quick audience poll that we hope you'll all take a minute to answer, and that is up on your screen. Now, the first question is, what are the tactics you most often use to contact donors? You can select up to two responses, and we'll just give you a few seconds to do that. And it looks like most of you are using direct mail letters, with phone calls coming in second place, emails, and then events. Our next question, have you experienced an uptick in donor interest over the last 6 months? Looks like a moderate increase is the most popular answer there, followed by a little increase. I guess that's a good sign. And our last question is, in 2011, what best describes your expected donor activity for your organization? And the most popular answer is a moderate increase. All good signs, I would think. So now that we've done that, let's get on to some of your move on to some of your questions. And please bear in mind that if we don't get to all of them, we are going to ask our speakers to answer them after the fact, and then we'll run those responses in an upcoming issue of the FS Advisor. Our questions seem to really be grouped into two sections, and one of them is about how to define what a major donor is. Now, I know that that varies from organization to organization, but Leanne, could you maybe address that? We have a lot of people asking, our gifts are all across the board. How do we define for our organization what number constitutes that major donor threshold?
Right. That's a great question, Margaret. As you said, it does depend on your organization. It depends on what, if you're in a capital campaign. I know that's how we defined our major gift as being $25,000 and up. I think a $10,000 gift would be a major gift. You just have to sit down as an organization, and depending on, where you're at the moment, if you're in a campaign, if you're not, if you're doing a campaign for scholarships or for an endowment, you just need to define what that number is. A five-figure gift, can be paid over a five-year period. So it's not quite as big as it might seem when you throw it out there. But that doesn't mean you don't accept anything less than that. That's made, basically how we defined our major donor, person that we would want to definitely concentrate on and very strategically start to try to cultivate so that we could raise them. We always want to raise them up, raise the level, and you don't want to set it too low, because it's something you really want to try to do is increase it. So again, it's very depending on your organization.
Thank you. Jeff or Frankie, do you have anything to add to that? I know I'm looking at the questions, and a lot of people are really looking for a very specific guideline, and I know there may not be one, but do you have any input into that?
I don't think that there is a specific guideline. I do think that it's different for every organization. I think that it's important to look at what your annual fund goal is and work backwards from that. So how many major gifts at what level would help you reach your goal? So if you can break down working backwards from that and say, all right, look at your pool of prospects and say, I think I have at least two people that can donate $5,000 this year. I think I have five people that could donate $10,000 this year. If you can work backwards from that chart and put people in place of those numbers, so two people, you have Jack Johnson and Judy Smith, and then make sure that you're making those asks, and that would help. Really help. Just creative analysis of your database would probably help you define where you can realistically put a major gift at.
Okay. Jeff, do you have any input there?
Absolutely. I would. Good thoughts and the analysis of two things. One would be your past giving. So what's your history? What's your record? And then what would your goal be? So whether it be an annual or capital or comprehensive. What is the goal going forward? And exactly as Frankie mentioned, then to do that analysis of what are those top tier of gifts. If you're for your annual fund, for example, we're finding that whatever an institution defines as a major gift is typically 60-70% of the campaign. So if you do your analysis, you could see what threshold that is, and you may choose to benchmark it up a bit because you want people to be growing. So what one organization now considers a $1,000 annual major gift, it may be in 5, 10 years, 5,000, 10,000.
And what about donors, and this is for anyone, what about donors who give, say, $25,000, but it was somehow hinged to a special event or something very specific, and it's not part of the annual giving? Do you include them when you're looking at potential major gifts, major donors?
I would recommend, yes. I mean, if they were part of an event, then they may not buy into your mission yet. It may be a friend of a friend, or they're there for different reasons, or for the entertainment, or who knows what. But certainly those, part of the goal, one of the goals of an event is to bring in new donors. So you want to take those people who may not be part of the family yet, so to speak, and then develop the plan to get them bought into the organization. And sometimes you're successful, and sometimes they were literally there to be at a friend's table or to hear an artist or to see a show. But exactly, your goal is to then transfer that one-time relationship to an ongoing relationship.
That's right. I agree with Jeff. On that, if they gave at an event and they gave that amount of money, that's definitely something that they must have been interested in. And so they're definitely somebody that you would want to follow up with on that interest and see if you can, you know, involve them more in your organization. And that might have been, you know, that's if they gave that, again, I'll say if they gave that unsolicited, you know, imagine what they could do if you really got them involved and then made a very planned ask for them.
Okay, we have questions. Jeff, I'm going to send this question your way. Leanne and Frankie spoke about very specific programs at very specific types of organizations, and we have some questions asking, what do you do if, say, you don't have a symphony that you can, like if you're not a symphony and you don't have performances and events that you can invite people to, or even if you don't have a very specific place that you can bring people, like a university, to come in and take classes or do things like that, if your mission is a little more general than that, and we even have someone ask if your mission is overseas, what kind of donor engagement opportunities do you have or can you find?
Exactly, and the overseas example is a good one. You know, we know that the most effective cultivation is face to face. So whether we're taking them on site or bringing part of our programs to them, the goal would be to be for a major donor to be face to face with them as much as we can. Second would be phone calls. So how often can we make calls? And then third would be emails and notes. So we want to and we want to find out, of course, why they're involved, what makes them motivated to give, what other interests do they have. So you may give them information, interact with them about your organization, but if they're also a golfer or a chef, there are ways to connect with them when you see things and send them articles and such. You want to learn about their family, my colleagues have shared that as well, and their values, what experiences made them who they are. And these are ways to connect with them. Ask, you know, no matter where they are, where your programs are, when you visit and talk by phone, you want to ask questions. You want to ask for their opinion. You want to ask for gifts and for favors. There are small things along the way they might be able to, for a major donor, maybe it's the use of their plane. If it's a, if it's a mission trip, could they fly you somewhere? Or what resources could they bring to bear beyond cash gifts that would get them more involved? How can you get their family involved? Profile them in newsletters, get them involved on boards. We've talked about that. Survey them, have them in focus groups, get them engaged with other donors and other volunteers for the cause. And then what, if it's a major donor and you're an overseas organization, then, you know, there may be There's probably a point in time where you're going to want to get them to South America or Africa, wherever the work's being done. But in the short term, what can you do to bring that to them through testimonials, to volunteers that may have been there on site? If you're in this country and have diverse program sites, then what other sites? There's no main campus, there's no symphony hall, but what kind of outreach programs do you do that you can get the donor to? So there are all kinds of opportunities that you don't have to have, a major campus, a major resource, but it's tailored to them. It's getting them engaged in that personal way, learning what makes them tick, asking for their advice, asking for their opinions, and just keeping that relationship going.
All right, thank you. This is an interesting question that I've heard people ask about before. Does your website and social media platforms, do they have any place in major gift cultivation and in nurturing those relationships? I'll throw that out to Frankie and Leanne.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question again?
Or is anyone using your website or social media platforms in engaging and cultivating and nurturing major gifts relationships?
Not for major gifts, but we definitely use Facebook and Twitter and email for all sorts of communication.
Yes, we do too. We use Facebook and Twitter. We even have them, you know, depending on what your interests are here, if it's athletics or academic program, we have different sites. But again, I don't know that we've used it successfully for major gifts. It's It's a great means for communication, but major gifts, you know, is something that really needs to happen, relationship between the people, and it's, you know, that's a great way to start a relationship, I'll put it that way. But it's really to continue the relationship on and move it to a major gift, it really needs to be a one-on-one type thing.
Well, that leads into our next question, and we have a lot of organizations or a lot of attendees who are saying that my organization, we're small, or our major gifts program is really non-existent at this point. How do we get started? What is the first step to getting people to agree to meet with you? I'm going to throw in a few questions here, so maybe you can address a few of them. You know, people say that they don't want to get personal information like birthdays and anniversaries because it seems like prying, but yet all of our presenters have said that information is important so that you can help the donors feel like you're paying attention to who they are and what their lives are about. What advice do each of you have for organizations that really are at the very beginning stages of a major gifts program?
I think one thing that's helpful, this is Frankie, I think it's helpful to definitely make some of those things subtle. Like if you have a pledge form or if there is an online way to donate, it doesn't have to be mandatory, but you can definitely put birth date, and you know, a lot of times people will respond to that, or anniversary date. Sometimes not as much people respond to that, but definitely the birthday thing people will respond to. So that might be helpful. Definitely be a little bit more subtle when you're trying to build those relationships, because I can see where that could definitely be awkward. And you know, just trust your people skills when you're in a conversation to not ask a question that would be really awkward.
Leanne?
I agree. You know, subtle ways, if you're, you know, and I'll use an example that I'm familiar with at alumni events. You can, if people register, you know, make sure you get all their information. And when you're starting to build your donor database, you know, you may have to go back and fill things in as you go along, but definitely important to start a donor database if you don't have one. And that means, you know, people that have given small gifts to your institution or your organization start, you know, I know when we got started building our development office, we didn't have one. And, you know, Talisma has been wonderful. It's a software program that we've used to begin to build our donor database. And you have to go back and continually update that as you find out the information. But there are ways to do that.
Jeff, would you like to add anything?
Sure. You know, when you're beginning a program for major gifts, and you may have been involved in fundraising in other avenues, there is going to be some you know, some natural discomfort because we are getting closer to people. We're getting more personal. But most people, again, knowing every donor individually, but most people want to be a worthwhile member, worthwhile cause. Most of us like to be sought. We like, you know, to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. So we're helping people to have significance and achieve goals. But the biggest advice would be to start. You've got to start somewhere. Start small. Define what your major gift would be. Set goals. Be accountable to yourself. Benchmark and evaluate. But don't be overwhelmed. Don't, you know, if it's whatever your organization is, you maybe set those parameters and start with your small shop with here's five individuals we're going to shepherd in a major gifts program, but start.
One of our attendees said that his organization started its major gifts program just by pulling its top 2% of donors, creating a donor society around them, and then growing it from there. Does that kind of sounds like what you're saying?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Perfect.
Okay. This, I think, is an interesting question. Are there occasions when it makes sense to ask the person what he or she feels comfortable giving, or should you always make a specific ask based on the history or the giving relationship?
This is Leanne. We've always, like I said, tried to, you know, if you ask someone what they feel comfortable giving, they're going to give you a number that's much lower than where you really want to target them. If you've done your background work, if you've done your research on that person, you know, one way that I found to be very effective to make someone feel comfortable is sometimes I will say, give them an example of recent gifts that we've received. For example, I may be talking to Joe at lunch, and I tell him that, you know, we've recently received a leadership gift for $50,000, and, you know, and then we've received several other gifts for $10,000, and that person will let you know, they will, you know, I've had people say, oh, I could never do that, or, you know, I think I would feel more comfortable in this range. And if you give examples, that's a good way for them to respond back to you, so that you know, you may think you know what level they're at, but that's a good way to determine it, you know, and before you make your formal ask to them.
Okay. Anyone else have any input on that?
I agree. It is important to get a benchmark, and hopefully by that time you have some sense of what the appropriate level. But we love the John Rockefeller method, and his was that you would approach someone and say, you're going to make the ask and you're going to say the amount, but you're also going to share that I don't know your circumstances and you may be in position to do more or may be in position to do less, but we were hoping you might consider this gift. And we found that great success with that approach.
Yeah, I agree. I think you really need to position yourself on what the needs of the organization are and not so much think about how the person is going to react to you, because you'll overthink the situation. Just think about the needs of the organization and where that number fits in line with your goals.
Okay, we have a question from someone who asks, if you identify someone who has not been a major donor but you feel has the potential to be a major donor, how much time and effort do you put into that, and is there a point where you just give up if you're not getting a lot of if you're not getting a lot of positive feedback from them? And you, at what point do you give up, or do you?
I think if it's getting to the point where you think it has gone on for too long, you have to find the right person to make the ask, whether that's a board member, the president of your organization. The ask has to be made so that you know where you stand. If there's been a lot of cultivation, so just to give examples, in my case, concerts, pre-concert talk, cocktail parties, donor lounge passes, and nothing has happened yet, it's time to make the ask. And then see where it goes from there. Put it in the hands of the donor to say yes or no.
Okay. Anyone else?
To be a good steward of your resources, there does come a time when you may have made multiple asks. That the reality is that, as great as our causes are, as our organizations are, not every donor is going to resonate, and it's not going to resonate with every donor. Rather, so there does come a time when it's not a match, and you probably won't engage that relationship. So definitely there's a certain point in time where you realize that they may have supported another organization and that's their passion, and that's great.
Okay, we're actually getting a little bit close to the end. This question I think maybe we might need to follow up on, but we have a lot of people asking for some general advice on, they say cold calling, but the initial contact of a potential major donor. I mean, obviously, this is someone who's been on your file, so it probably won't be cold calling, but how do you make that initial contact? What are the most important points that you want to make in that initial contact?
One thing that I found, and in my example in my slide, I said that, you know, I like to find my major donors by looking through my annual givers. So one icebreaker I use when I call is to always start off the call by saying, I'm calling to thank you for your previous support. And it doesn't matter to what degree that was. It could have been a $25 gift. But to thank them for their previous support, and it sort of breaks the ice. Or if that's not the appropriate thing, if they've not given or they haven't, you know, you've had no contact with them. Sometimes I say, you know, we as an organization are trying to do a better job of reaching out. And, you know, I just wanted to call and let you know what we're doing right now, and then tell them current events or whatever you're doing. But kind of an icebreaker, just tell them maybe you haven't done a great job in the past, but you're trying to reach out to people now. And that seems to break the ice a little bit.
Okay. You know, actually, we are very close to being finished. I'm sorry to interrupt the rest of you, but we're going to have to close out. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. On behalf of Fundraising Success and Talisma Fundraising, thank you for attending the webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. That's at fundraisingsuccessmag.com. And if you would, please take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen. We'd be really grateful. Your feedback will help us to figure out what kind of webinars we would present in the future. And I hope to see you all at the next Fundraising Success webinar. Thank you.